Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for our super producer, Max Defcon Williams.
What's it? What's like a klaxon? Is that the sound that you hear?
Yeah.
Remain indoors. Uh-huh. Remain indoors. There's been an event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm Noel.
And I'm Ben.
Yeah, you are indeed. Today we're talking about the seminal 1990s action film Broken Arrow, starring John Travolta and Christian Slater.
Seminal? That's pretty bold.
Yeah?
Yeah? You think it's a seminal?
Am I misusing it?
No.
I've been known to misuse words.
That is correct, because that is an amazing film.
Did I get it right? Isn't Christian Slater in it?
I don't know.
He's the good guy. Travolta's the bad guy.
Spoiler alert.
I remember he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
What is a Broken Arrow? Oh, it's also, by the way, a Bryan Adams song. Who else is going to bring you? I think he's talking about an actual Broken Arrow, though.
Yes.
He's naming off weird objects, like a bottle of rain, you know?
Sure.
Don't think he's talking about lost nukes.
Maybe they're all code words for different governmental disasters.
Bryan Adams had a finger on the pulse.
Like, yeah, it's like a biocontaminant that's lost. Yeah.
A bottle of rain. That's good. Yeah.
So
I want to kind of just jump in here and go completely off topic, though, because Ben, screw you, man.
Okay.
Screw you.
What happened?
We just recorded Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, and Ben was talking about how much he loves I'll Follow You in the Dark by Death Cab for Cutie.
I'm not above it.
I will state this right now. I just spent $260 on tickets.
$261.
$261 on tickets to go see Death Cab for Cutie, 20th Anniversary Transatlanticism, along with 20th Anniversary of Give Up by Postal Service.
Yeah.
I love Death Cab for Cutie, but I stated to Ben, that song is terrible.
Yeah.
He told me listen to it. And that was stuck in my head.
Well, it's a catchy jam, and it's not terrible. It's just saccharine, and it just makes you kind of...
I think the hype killed it, you know? Like, it's one of those songs where when the band plays it, the front guy doesn't have to do much because the crowd's going...
They love it. That's right. I saw them at a festival in Atlanta recently, or a couple of years ago. God, time is weird. It's one of the ones he does on acoustic. It doesn't really have a big explosive moment.
Right.
So it's a bit of a snoozer, but I think it's pretty.
It's just so elegantly written.
It is elegantly written. I'm a much bigger fan of the Postal Service than I am of Death Cab for Cutie, and I will die on that hill. Speaking of dying on hills...
Wait. Max, where are you going with this? You listened to it.
So I listened to it. And it was pretty good. I went then put on Styrofoam Plates off the photo album. Much better song. If you think I Will Follow You in the Dark is a great song, listen to Styrofoam Plates. It's a less famous album, but it's a much better song.
I refuse to. I refuse for us to do a Max with the Facts on that one because that is a musical opinion.
That was Max with the Whacks. The Whack takes.
Worth it.
You guys know what are real facts? There are lost nukes.
There are tons of lost nukes. Is this where we were going, right? Like, okay.
Somehow we were going to get there.
We set up Broken Arrow, right?
We did a couple things.
So according to AtomicArchive.com, since 1950, there have been
no less than 32 nuclear weapon accidents. And to your point earlier, Noel, those are conventionally known as broken arrows.
Yeah, or as we like to refer to them collectively, whoopsies.
Yeah, nuke whoopsies.
Nuke whoopsies. Yeah, it's like, how does this happen, one might ask? Well, we're going to talk about that today. 32 nuclear weapon accidents, broken arrows, like you said, Ben, an unexpected event, according to AtomicArchive.com, involving nuclear weapons that result in the accidental launching, firing, detonating, theft, or loss of the weapon.
Important distinction, right? Because it's not always just losing the thing. You could accidentally launch it. And this, it might sound strange, folks, because as you know, there are tons of redundancies involved. The U.S. nuclear arsenal is created in such a way that as long as everything works, you can't just have one guy have a bad afternoon and then all of a sudden, you know, destroy the Marshall Islands. But the big ones, the scary ones, are the ones that have been lost. Like you were saying, six nuclear weapons over the course of history have been lost. They've never been found. That number, we should say, is with big thanks to Max here, we should say that number is highly debated because some people think there are just three missing nukes. Some people think there are way, way more. And that's the tricky part. That's why it's a two-part episode, right? Because we don't know.
We don't know. And I mean, let's think about it. Nukes are a thing that like some people get and other people don't get. Mm-hmm. They don't like it when I'm talking like geopolitically speaking.
Yeah.
And we're one of the ones that get them, you know? Mm-hmm. And we, I guess, because of compacts and agreements and, you know, whatever, accords, let's say, their nuclear deproliferation and all of that. And then we know also that there are countries that want them.
Oh, want them so bad.
Or possibly are making them and not telling us about it. And they're not playing fair. But fair is what's fair. What in love and war, you know, right. And love and nukes.
Right. And this is, this takes us down so many interesting paths, you know, because nuclear weapons, at least in the view of the U.S., nuclear weapons are one of those things where if we have them, it's great. If someone else has them, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. It's like flying cars, right? Like if flying cars are a great idea, if there's only one and you're the one who owns it.
And if we all have them, then it's sort of a zero sum game.
You're right.
And or mutually assured destruction, mutually assured destruction is the term.
Yeah, mad. And so people got real mad during the first recorded case of broken arrow situation. It happened on February 13th, 1950. There's a B-36 going out of an Air Force base southeast of Fairbanks, Alaska, and it's flying to a base in Fort Worth, Texas, and it's doing training. It's simulating a combat mission, and the weapon aboard this B-36 had a dummy capsule installed, so it's like a fake gun. And 6 hours into the flight, the aircraft gets some serious mechanical difficulties, has to shut down three engines at 12,000 feet, and it couldn't maintain a level flight. It headed off over the Pacific Ocean. It dropped the weapon from 8,000 feet altitude. A flash occurred on impact, a sound, a shockwave. The weapon's high explosive material detonated, but not the whole thing. The crew bailed out over Princess Royal Island, and they later found the wreckage of the aircraft. So everything went wrong on this one, but it was not a nuclear detonation.
No, but it did sort of have a domino effect, you know. It set some parts in motion. In 1950, we know of at least five broken arrow events.
In 1 year?
In 1 year.
Great. Great. Yeah,
and the last one took place on November 10th of that year in Quebec. That's in Canada. And there is a quote here from a writer named Zaria Gourvette, writing for BBCFuture.com, that describes these events as such. A B-50 jettisoned a Mark IV bomb over the St. Lawrence River near Rivière-du-Loup, about 300 miles northeast of Montreal. The weapon's high explosive detonated on impact. Although lacking its essential plutonium core, the explosion did scatter nearly 100 pounds of uranium. Okay.
Tight.
Not great. yeah, not like catastrophic.
No, man, it's awesome.
It's just uranium. What's a little uranium between
friends?
Just
a little uranium, right? Just a sprinkle, you know, like Salt Bay level. Unfortunately, you know, as you established, there were many more Broken Arrow events, 15 more throughout the 1950s, and we're not sure how many during the 1960s, because this is the height of the Cold War. There's a lot of secrecy on both sides of the curtain. And Zarya Gorvette, who you mentioned earlier, talks a bit about the concept of mutually assured destruction with the Soviet Union. This is the time of the dead hand. Remember, we did a Stuff They Don't Want You Know episode on that, the dead hand system that the Soviet Union had, and Russia probably still has at this to this day, is a thing that is designed to instantly retaliate against a nuclear strike, even if Moscow is wiped out. It's very, very spooky stuff. People were rightly terrified. And because both sides felt like they were on the brink of a war at any given moment, the U.S. made the decision to keep airplanes armed with nuclear weapons in the sky at all time. All year round, 24/7, they're going to have some birds in the sky with nukes, and they do that for 8 years in an operation with a hilariously dumb name, Chrome Dome.
Chrome Dome. Why not? That's fun. Isn't a Chrome Dome like sort of a, I mean, it's kind of a term of abuse for a bald person.
Oh, I thought Chrome Dome, for some reason, I'm thinking of like implants in someone's head.
I think calling someone a Chrome Dome could like be considered hate speech. Yeah. If you're a Larry David-esque figure.
It's like, mean toward like Jonathan Strickland.
Correct.
So this is kind of funny because the inspiration of this episode came from me playing Fallout 4, but Chrome Dome is what they call the Gen 1 since in Fallout 4, you know, those creepy robots that show up and try to kill you.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure they're Chrome Domes. And, you know, there's a lot of nuke jokes in Fallout, such as, you know, the like devastating weapon is called the Fat Man, which is the name of the nuke that got dropped on.
And Little Boy.
And in the game, it's like a personal nuke.
It's like a nuke slingshot.
It's pretty cool. But yeah, just to clarify too, Chrome Dome is in fact a bald person.
Okay.
Specifically, it's idiomatic, indelicate, and offensive, according to Wiktionary.org.
We are against prejudice, of course, in any form here.
Bald people are still people.
Right. And
even if their name's Strickland. I mean, Jonathan, don't want to say the last name many times. We don't want him showing up or anything like that.
Yeah. Let's be careful. We're on the precipice of crossing that Rubicon. So where are these Broken Arrows happening? All over the place. South Dakota, Maryland, Texas, California, North Carolina, New Jersey, Indiana, Ohio. Also, of course, Savannah, Georgia.
That's right. Savannah, Georgia, the Redneck Riviera. Okay, that's not quite right, but it is. It's a Riviera of sorts. I think the Redneck Riviera is like Myrtle Beach, right?
I guess, you know, it's a state of mind.
I think it is. Exactly.
It's like salt life.
Savannah's really cool, though. It's kind of our own little New Orleans. Here, I said this here.
Yeah, you got there.
I'm embarrassed already, but I can't take it back. It's sort of New Orleans-esque. You know, there's a bit of a history of piracy because of its proximity, you know, to the ocean. So there is like a really cool, kind of goofy restaurant called the Pirate's House.
I remember that.
There where you can get, I just remember like, I was a weird kid. I really liked escargot. I still do like it. Snails. Grew up eating it in Germany where it was called Schnecken.
I cook it at home.
I've never cooked it. It's actually, you know what? You can get it in a can. Not bad.
I've had it in a can. Yeah. The thing Lauren Vogelbaum and I used to do snack stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Escargot has been unfairly maligned. We promise you it's pretty cool.
It's just a sponge for garlic butter is all it is.
And if you know what? If you eat oysters or clams, the boogers of the sea.
Yeah.
You have no, you have nothing to stand on if you condemn enjoyers of escargot.
Snails are just a little chewier than an oyster.
A little chewier.
It's somewhere between the consistency of like a calamari and an oyster. But I find them to be delightful. Anyway, Pirate's House has them. Childhood memory. Savannah, Georgia, a beautiful place. Tybee Island, all of that good stuff. But also home to a buried nuke, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And we're gonna get to that one. Now, this is going to be a two-part episode, folks. We just want you to know that there are way more of these out there than you would reasonably assume. And they're not limited to the United States either, right, Noel?
No, no, they're definitely not. We've got some, you know, throughout the Pacific Ocean in Palmares, Spain, in Thule? How do you say that? Is that like in Greenland or something? What is the White Sea, which is Scandinavian? Green. What is it pronounced Thule? Thule? I don't know that one, man.
Let's see. I have been saying Thule, but we're not from Greenland. So let's give it a go here. We'll actually just play this.
We are looking at how to pronounce the name of the Swedish company.
Oh, I love this.
That owns a collection of brands related to outdoor and transportation products.
He's so delightful.
How do you say it? You may think it could be Thule or Thule.
We did. We thought all of these things.
For some reason, probably because it is a Swedish company, this is to be said as Thule.
Hey, well done.
Cool. We learned something. Thanks, internet guy.
Probably because it is a Swedish company.
Yeah, with also sort of an indiscernible accent, because for a minute I was like, is this guy Swedish? But then he says it as though the Swedes are an other of some sort, you know? There's that.
We're going to learn more about that guy. So, yeah, these broken arrows are all around. There are even a few incidents that remain highly classified today, such as a little bit of a FUBAR situation somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of the Iron Curtain, we've got reports of Soviet broken arrows because they were making some of the same mistakes that Uncle Sam was making.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire. With the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I got to say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody. Like I was in Mad Max or something.
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right?
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Okay. So enter the golden age of excess, the 1970s. That's when the wave of peace and love and hippie good vibes broke. That's me paraphrasing Hunter S. Thompson very poorly. The other thing that broke in the 1970s, arrows, baby. The broken arrow. Get it? I that was my attempt at a transition. AtomicArchive.org, once again, talks about a couple of incidents in the 70s. So 70s wasn't like exactly the golden age of broken arrows. Four, however, in the 80s, three of which, to your point, Ben, were Soviet. And we've got four more in the combined decades that followed. Max comes in hot with the facts here, saying there are two ways that we know about broken arrows. One of them is that it's too big of a story for, you know, the government to hush up. The second is from classified data that has been declassified. The first point would be it would be some sort of incident or event that was, like, observed, right?
It's too big to keep quiet. Mm-hmm. We're near a major city or community, you know, so hundreds of people see a plane crash. Mm-hmm. What are you going to tell them?
Exactly. And again, declassified documents, to the point we've been kind of hitting at this whole time. There are probably more of these that we don't know about yet because these documents haven't been declassified. That takes time.
100%. You know why? Because if someone is directly responsible and they fumbled the nuclear football, then you want to wait till they're retired or dead.
Totally.
So that they don't get embarrassed. But this, let's start. You mentioned Spain. So that's the home of one of the most famous broken arrow cases. It's 1966, the golden age for losing nuclear weapons. And we're going back to Zarya Gorvet for BBC Future. She writes, "It was a mild winter's morning at the height of the Cold War. On January 17th, 1966, at around 10:30 a.m., a Spanish shrimp fisherman watched a misshapen white parcel fall from the sky and glide toward the sea. It had something hanging beneath it. He couldn't make out what it was. He saw it slip beneath the waves. And then people in a nearby fishing village, Palomares, they looked up, and from their perspective, they saw two giant fireballs hurtling toward them, and explosions ensued."
Yeah, that's what you call a big story.
Yeah, right.
Two giant fireballs hurling towards people. So yeah, the quaint solitude of this tiny burg was absolutely upended.
Also, I kind of want to jump in here. I cut a line out of this because it got a little too graphic, but there was other stuff hurling at them too that we will just leave.
Was it poop?
Not I don't
know
that.
I don't know why my mind went straight to poop.
Body parts.
I'm not going to say yes to you that, Ben.
Okay. But so, body parts.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Well, that was a diplomat. I'm sorry I led with poop, guys. That was just the child in me.
No, it's a fair question.
No, it's a good question.
They're on those planes for a long time. It has to go store it somewhere.
It's true. So the building, the ground shook, you know. There's, you know, flying pieces of
poop.
Poop, potentially. And we're not confirming nor denying.
Poop, potentially.
As far as this joke is going to go. Shrapnel, right? The stuff what slices. Yeah.
Oh, I learned a dumb fact about shrapnel. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
It is invented. The inventor of shrapnel is a guy whose name is, I kid you not, Henry Shrapnel.
That's amazing.
And that's what he's known for now.
That's cool. Do you think, like famous doctors whose names get associated with like horrible diseases?
Sure.
That's kind of a bummer, right?
Like how, or just public figures, like they did Lou Gehrig dirty.
They really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's his legacy is no longer being an amazing sports baller. I don't even know what sport he played. Was it baseball? It was baseball, wasn't it?
You guys know I'm wearing an ALS shirt right now.
Did you do the Are ice you? Bucket challenge?
Oh, stand up. Hey.
Yeah, baseball is the best.
So, yeah, that's a good point. I know we're all over the place right now, just like Broken Arrow situations.
Reel
just
it back in, baby.
Yeah, just like these nukes. So like you said, Uncle Sam can't keep this quiet. They try to, but they definitely can't. The story is already too big. It's an entire village. Everyone's seen this. Newspapers are reporting rumors of a terrible accident shortly thereafter. They're saying two U.S. planes collided in midair, and they scattered not one, not two, but four D-28 thermonuclear bombs across the area.
I was sure it was going to be three.
Right, we skipped three.
Yeah, I like
that. They found
that.
Three.
Okay.
They found three.
I see.
Of the four.
Okay, got it. That is wild, man. One of them sank into the sea and was lost beneath the waves of the Mediterranean.
Under the sea.
Yeah, that's right. And now it was game on to get down in there and find it. So this thing, it was a 1.1 megaton warhead. I always love that megaton is sort of spelled like British style.
Yes.
Like T-O-N-N-E. Whenever we use the word ton to refer to a measurement, isn't it just spelled T-O-N?
Yeah, it's a US v. UK thing.
Right.
And I like megaton just because to me it sounds like it's an anime.
Isn't megaton the name of a city or a settlement in Fallout as well?
I don't know, you guys. You guys know I'm more a Skyrim kid.
Nearly so. Certain it is.
Yeah, which one is it though? It's not.
Isn't it the ship? Isn't it like the big old repurposed warship? No. Megaton is the place that you go very first in the game, I think.
Oh,
yeah, and so Fallout 3.
The Pridwin is the Zeppelin in 4.
Yeah, because the mayor or the sheriff of Megaton is this fellow with like a totally goofy Western hat on and like a kind of a Mad Max vest. And you interact with him. He's an NPC that you hang out with.
Non-player character.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. We're giant nerds. Sorry, we keep bouncing on this one. We're having fun. With what is ultimately kind of a heavy topic.
You know, yes.
At the end of the day, the fact that any one country or group possesses this technology, by the way, looking forward to checking out the Barbie movie, and of course,
Oppenheimer
on the same day, perhaps. But it's wild that there could ever be a situation where something with this much destructive power could just be whoopsied, you know, lost.
Right.
It's wild.
One megaton is a unit of explosive force that equals 1 million metric tons of TNT. So when we talk about something that is a megaton warhead,
million metric tons?
Yeah, it's just we have to remember it's terrifying that these things exist even when we know where they are.
Right. I mean, let's picture somebody holding a single stick of dynamite. Okay, remember it kept happening in Lost where they had that unstable dynamite and inevitably somebody bumped it
right.
And then just got blown up. And it was like with one or two sticks,
mm-hmm.
You know, this is million tons of those. I mean, this is the force to decimate cities, obliterate.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if anybody wants to truly experience a very, very accurate depiction of what this is like, if you want to watch it as a cartoon, highly recommend the anime film Barefoot Gin. It is incredibly messed up
it's bleak, sad,
but it is beautiful, and it really does. There's a sequence where a nuke goes off where it just shows in very graphic. Detail what would happen.
And the U.S. military, the world's militaries are aware of the dangers inherent in this kind of technology and weaponry. So they want to get their nuke back, and the military sends a crack team of experts to search the bottom of the Mediterranean for this nuke. One of the members of this team is a guy named Philip Myers. Myers and his crew are thinking out of the box. They're trying to imagine any possible way they can find this nuke. So they get some help from some weird sources, two crazy inventions. One is a weird idea made up in the 18th century by an amateur mathematician who used to be a Presbyterian minister, and it helps people use information about past events to calculate the probability of them happening in the future. Hmm. What?
Yeah, it's called Bayesian inference, I believe. Is that how that's pronounced? And just, you know, we're not math surgeons here, a ridiculous history, but it is, according to the interwebs, a method of statistical inference in which this theorem, Bayes' theorem, is used to update the probability for a hypothesis as more evidence or information becomes available. Bayesian inference is an important technique in statistics and especially in mathematical statistics. Cool. I feel dumber.
They got
but
real
also
absurd.
Smarter somehow. Yeah, they definitely were thinking outside of the nuclear box.
Yeah, and they were saying, okay, maybe this will help us predict where the bomb ultimately landed, like where it sank.
That's right.
And because then, it's a needle in a haystack.
100%. And then we have the delightfully named Alvin, which whenever I see that where I can't help but say it in Dave's angry voice, you know, from the chipmunk.
Yeah.
Alvin!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But gosh, this is kind of prescient for some news events. A cutting-edge deep-sea ocean submarine able to dive to unprecedented depths, described as looking like a rotund white shark.
Ooh,
and yeah. It had people in it. And this is in the 60s. Mm-hmm. Why are these startup douchebags imploding people in the 2000s?
Because they're going down much, much further. And they're skipping safety checks.
100%. I mean, yeah. it was a bit of a rhetorical question.
And I just want to point out, I wrote this before that all happened, so no one accused me of writing this in bad taste.
No,
it was Fallout that motivated this.
No, yeah, nobody's okay. No.
And it's an important fact. It's an important fact because Bayesian inference is the theory that informs their search, and Alvin is the vessel that takes them there.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah, it was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's
and
cool,
I just remember, it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car, I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something, you know?
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
Right.
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one, and that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino, and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it so. The Monte Carlo was tough. I owned a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com. They do find this missing nuke. It's on March 1st, 1966. And from the declassified imagery, what you can see is that the tip of the missing nuclear weapon is covered by a white parachute that had partially deployed and it tangled itself up with the nuke, with the missile. And
looked kind of like a spooky ghost, didn't it?
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
I'm still blown away by this sub, you know, existing in 1966.
I'm blown away that they can find this in the Mediterranean. That's
a million percent.
Impressive.
It's a lot. And they certainly, they were basically using maths and this sub, you know, and like, it's not like they had crazy cameras or anything or unmanned, you know, vessels, you know, this is
sat-nav.
Really wild and really, you know, enterprising. But yeah, apparently, you know how those nukes, when they deploy them, they often have a parachute.
Sure.
So this, like you said, the thing was wrapped around and it had this billowy kind of, they described it actually in the piece for BBC Future as a ghostly shroud.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostly shroud.
Well, and here's where it gets even weirder, folks. Finding the nuke is not the same thing as retrieving the nuke. They know where it is, and the odds were against them. And now Philip Myers and his team have to figure out how to get this bomb out of the ocean floor, where it's thousands of feet into the depths, and they have to do it without detonating the thing. So they basically do. If this is old school, but if you've ever locked yourself out of a car and used a
Slim Jim
or a wire
to get under and then pull the thing.
Yeah, a clothes hanger or something.
For sure.
That they tried to do that with a nuclear weapon. The way they describe it is, we improvised a kind of fishing line out of thousands of feet of heavy duty nylon rope. And a metal hook at the end, just like breaking into a car, trying to use those
claw machine,
arcade claw machines.
100%.
That's what they try to do.
Really quickly, Ben, why did the thing not detonate? Aren't these things often like in these days on some sort of pressure change detonator, or like, how is it literally? It's not a button. Do you hit? Is it like remote controlled fully? I think there's different ones.
But yeah. It's a good question.
So I know on this one, or at least around this time, there was like a switch that had to be switched for like the material for the bomb to really come together to actually be able to detonate. So in a lot of these cases, it hadn't been switched. So like the stuff,
they were separate. The elements were separate.
It hadn't been pushed together.
It's like, I see.
You drop this thing, there's like, you know, the first one, the high matter explosion went off, but since there wasn't actually, I don't think, any uranium in it, there wasn't. A lot of them, they'll say a nuclear detonation was not possible.
I see.
Which is like safety, which is one of the safety measures protecting it, which is good.
Yeah.
Right.
We have one of them down the road, I'm going to tell you guys right now, where that safety measure fails.
Right. Yeah, we're going to get to it. Again, these are the B-28 thermonuclear bombs. There are a couple of different variants. But even though it hasn't detonated, and even though the team has been briefed on the danger of these things, they're still, you know, rightly kind of terrified. Myers says we were going very slowly, very cautiously. And there's a funny line here. This guy feels like he's cool to hang out with.
Oh, yeah.
He says, so we just kind of waited around. We were anxious. We wanted to figure out what we would do if we actually were able to hoist it out of the water. And things go wrong because they lift this thing from the ocean floor and the parachute, which is still in play, is slowing down the effort. Because think about it, now it's a parachute working in the water in reverse.
And here's the thing too, man. I was already blown away by the existence of this manned deep sea sub, this small deep sea sub. This doesn't work. They ultimately fail. They deploy another kind of sub a month later that is robotic. I would not have thought in the 60s mm-hmm. that they would even have the ability to have remote-controlled robotic subs. It just goes to show. Yeah, spare no expense, but also goes to show how much, like, the government holds back, you know, from, like, right. consumer availability or from, you know what I mean, from even just, like, they're always a couple steps ahead.
Oh,
know?
Of course, yeah. The technological suppression is real. And they had to use this robotic sub because Alvin, or little Alvin, was almost stuck down there, tangled in the parachute with the missing nuke.
Why didn't they send the robot in the first place? It seems like that would have been the smart move.
Maybe it was still very experimental.
Maybe.
You know?
I mean, wouldn't you say, given the time period, something like that would be very ahead of its time?
Yeah, I would think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's one example of a successful retrieval of a broken arrow. What happens is the RoboSub is controlled by a cable. It's able to grab the bomb by its parachute and haul it up, and then they had to disarm it. They managed to do it. It's a harrowing, terrifying process, but it's one of the most successful broken arrow cases. And as we're going to see, maybe we finish part one talking a little bit more about the less successful cases here, because there are a number of lost or broken arrows. So, like we said earlier, how many broken arrows are out there? It depends on who you ask. It's really tough to tell because a lot of this is still classified. Some folks say it's 6, some say it's 3, and some say many, many more. It kind of also depends on how you want to define it. So if you don't have all the components installed on a weapon, on a missile or a bomb, then does it count as a broken arrow?
Ah, okay.
You
know,
if it's like a training session, you got a dummy mm-hmm. bomb there, mm-hmm. Then does... I feel like this stuff is dangerous enough that it should still count. You know, like how you always treat a gun like it's loaded, even if it's a prop.
Exactly. Yeah, because, I mean, as we know, sometimes when people think it's just a prop, it can still put one right in your dome.
Yeah. Your chrome dome.
Yeah, indeed, your chrome dome. Props to the bald community.
So the first of these lost arrows is from our initial example. It's from the February 13th, 1950 B-36 bomber incident. Where they had that engine trouble, and the U.S. military said, okay, no matter what happens, we're not going to have a crash with a nuclear warhead on U.S. soil. So drop the bomb, the Fat Man, 30 kiloton Mark IV, into the Pacific Ocean. And according to the official report, the bomb, like you had said earlier, Noel, the bomb didn't have that plutonium core you need for a nuclear detonation. So some of the more pedantic people will say it doesn't count as a broken arrow.
Another case on March the 10th of 1956 took place. Around 6 years after that first bomb was lost, two nuclear cores from a B-47 bomber were lost when that plane crashed into the Mediterranean. Once again, it's Mediterranean. It's really lousy with this stuff.
It's a nuke sponge.
I guess so. Perhaps it had to do with the flight path.
It was specifically making the journey from MacDill Air Force Base in Florida to Ben Gurion Air Force Base in Morocco. It did it one of those really badass aerial refuels, which I think are so cool. The pipe kind of comes down, and they hover. That's this what a neat maneuver. But it failed to make contact with a tanker for an additional refueling, and was then reported missing.
Ooh,
like the plane, right?
Yeah, and we don't know what kind of nuke it was carrying, but we do know the B-47, this type of plane at this time, usually had a 3,400 kilogram Mark 15 nuclear bomb. And to this day, no trace of the bomb nor the plane have ever been found. So Mediterranean scavengers, treasure hunters, now is your time.
Indeed. Is that the kind of, I don't know, man. Do you think there are like amateur nuke hunters out there?
100%.
You really? I guess it'd be a bit, like, to what end? As an artifact or like for nefarious purposes?
Nefarious. Think about how you could sell one of those things for.
Some of it nefarious, some of it just for the glory.
Yeah.
Like eccentric treasure hunters.
Yeah.
The final bomb that got lost, the final of the three lost and never recovered, occurred sometime in the beginning of 1968. It was the USS Scorpion, a nuclear sub that sank about 400 miles southwest of the Azores, and almost 100 people died, 99 crew members. No one survived on the sub. It was also carrying a pair of nuclear-tipped weapons, which yield like 250 kilotons. So immensely dangerous. And that's just part of the story. Right now, you know what, Noel? We've got to call this our two-parter. Got to get out of here. I got to tell you, I love this stuff. I will rewatch Broken Arrow. For you, dude, I'm going to see if I consider it seminal.
I use that term very, very liberally. I have not seen the film since it came out. It does currently hold a, I think, 2.5-star rating on IMDb.
Oh, you checked?
I did check, and I was right about the cast. I remember practically nothing about the movie other than that is where I first learned the term Broken Arrow outside of the Bryan Adams song.
I'm trying to remember. I remember liking it because I loved those kind of movies when I was a kid. I'm trying to remember which film John Travolta. This is during his like face-off villain phase.
He's right around there. Yep.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the film was where he was a hacker with a ponytail. Was it Swordfish?
I didn't see Swordfish.
Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
Okay.
I remember him being a hacker with a ponytail, and I have no idea. So I'm going to say Swordfish.
Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. That is clearly, you know, maybe not the most important mystery of today's show. I think that prize goes to the missing nuclear weapons. But please tune in for part two, folks. We have much more to explore. Big, big thanks to our super producer and research associate for today's episode, Mr. Max Williams.
Huge thanks to Alex Williams, who composed this slammin', jammin', bammin' bop you're listening to at this very moment. Christopher Asiotis here in spirit. Eve's Jeff Coates. Traversing this wild world.
Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. the Quister, a.k.a. the John Travolta of Ridiculous History.
That's right. Yeah.
Except no ponytail, which it is Swordfish.
Yeah, our personal. Yes. Yeah. Chrome Dome would also be a really good name for like a bald Bond villain.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps with some sort of implant, or like a metal. Like,
or a He-Man action figure.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no question about it.
Because they really kind of went basic.
They sure did.
With the universe of He-Man. Yeah, that's the name of the main character.
I know, we've talked about this. This is totally true.
Why is it She-Ra? Anyway, yeah,
what
you're right.
What does the Ra stand for? It just sounds like a battle cry.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.